Hi everyone, we're back again. It's the second episode, I would say, and I wanted to bring in something new. At least, you know, during the first episode, I was kind of commenting on someone else's video, and then, you know, kind of looking into it, learning about it, and I thought I wanted to do something new as well, and a different topic, not from the same person, but from someone else. And so today I was actually listening to this video about a 104-year-old book revealing you know, deep spiritual knowledge, and I really like the creator. He's also, I would say, similar, where very fascinated with, like, not only spiritual things but historical, you know, evidences and historical knowledge. And that's where he was saying that, you know, he came across how ancient cultures, you know, were observed and interpreted the cosmos, and that's how he thinks everything about the cosmos is definitely hidden from the current world where we live in. I mean, we don't usually think about cosmos, or it's something very far away, so that's why we don't really think about it. And, you know, he was actually reading from this 104-year-old book that has really a lot of knowledge. And actually, there's a link to the text which is in Wikimedia. So right now I'm kind of wanting to look into the book itself and kind of comment on this. And for those who are new, I don't really want to kind of repeat my background again. It's all in the first episode, but at least you just get to know. It's really more about commenting, discussion, and really pondering with my own thoughts and my knowledge, my insight, and to do research as well, and to kind of be open to things. Although, you know, everyone has different opinions and I have my own opinion, so not everything is something I might accept or I find it hard to believe, you know, given the insights or the knowledge that I already have in my head. So it's kind of that, but, you know, I still have that fascination wanting to learn more, really dig into the truth of the world, and relating it a lot to Jesus, because from my experience and from my knowledge, there are so many things, even spiritually, you know, or energy related, or even this relating to the cosmos or universal laws. It just brings back on how science reveals Jesus or reveals the truth of God. People think, you know, like, the Bible, don't take it literally, which is true, but at the same time, I don't really believe in coincidences. So that's why with this, it's like both physical and spiritual, they connect. At least that's what I believe in my head, because there's no other way to address things. And there's once, because there are so many people who, I guess, deny the Bible or deny things in it, which I think, you know, from their own personal experiences, I don't know what their experience, but when I hear that, all the more it's like saying how, you know, the Bible talks about God using the bad things to do good, like what happened with what's his name, Joseph, the one who were betrayed by his brothers, or was his name Joshua? I think it was Joshua. No, it was Joseph. Yeah, I think that was Joseph. And it's really like using the bad things that happened to him and actually believing that God used it for good eventually. So in a way, like how a lot of people are criticizing the Bible, saying that, oh, it's been edited, you know, and everything else, but yet at the same time, there's good things coming from that, where, you know, now a lot of people are able to, I guess, believe in God in that way. But it's like a different method of gaining consciousness, it's more of a easier method, I would say, because in a way there's a storytelling and it's easier to kind of look into it rather than just feel it scientifically. And when, you know, Bill was mentioning everything about the pineal gland, you know, our body and everything, which will also be addressed here in this book that we're gonna talk about, it just brings back all the evidences that the world, even science, actually supports the idea of God and the creation, because I can't deny how perfect it is and how it just matches everything from the cosmos to, you know, our photons, our atoms, and like to the whole story. That's how good our universe is in a way. That's how good, great, good God is, and that's why everyone calls him the great architect of the universe, right? So that's something I believe in. But yeah, let's just jump into it, where, you know, what this book is. So the title of this book is called The Antichrist. Yes, the Antichrist. And it was written by Dr. George W. Carey. It was reprinted from Azoth of June 1918. Okay, and let's see what else. I don't know, but I think back then, 1918 or something, it was there's a price called 15 cents. Wow, how much would it be now in this generation? But yeah, I think, you know, it's good to look into it, because when I was watching the video and like reading, a lot of interesting things that I never really thought about, but, you know, all the more made sense of how perfect God is in a way, like how he create things so perfectly, including our body. Like, our body is a masterpiece. Even if you say, you know, like, oh, you don't believe in Jesus, you know, you believe in consciousness, subconsciousness, chakras and everything, but it's like kind of coming back, like, how were we designed, or how were we created is my question. Because to have a body this perfect with all the complex functions, or the complexity of our bodies, the different systems, for, you know, from our nervous systems, digestive systems, reproductive systems, it's so complex. And that's the thing I always think about, because no human can design like our body as it is, not even like just cells or the atoms coming in to just create it just like that. You know, there has to be like a creator in a way. And you know how the Bible always says we are created in God's image, it also brings back again, like, you know, how the cosmos, the stars, tells us the story and how it's created, how it's related to our body. And that's what we'll be seeing here in this book. So I'm gonna read, they have like three parts, but I don't want this podcast to last very long, hopefully 30 to 1 hour. The first episode was around 1 hour, so let's see, because I can get, I guess, too passionate talking about it, but it's new knowledge and really just great pondering things. And the video really shows more with images and visuals, but since I'm not going through the video now, really just going through the book itself, because he only took out some key points from the book, and I wanted to read all of the book hopefully and then kind of ponder it. And sadly, there's no visuals for you guys to look at, even for myself, but we'll see about it. Maybe I'll do some research in between, or kind of just ponder, you know, as we read on. Okay, so part one. Primitive Christians, the essence, fully realized and taught the great truth that Christ was a substance, an oil or ointment contained especially in the spinal cord, consequently in all parts of the body, as every nerve in the body is directly or indirectly connected with the wonderful river that flows out of Eden, the upper brain, to water the garden. Okay, so this is the first paragraph, talking about how primitive Christians, which is the early Christians, talking about how they are actually really fully realized, and you know, they have reached that point of singularity, you know, that higher self or consciousness, and so they know the real truth. And in this book, they're claiming that, you know, Christ was just a substance and oil, like somewhat of like an anointed oil, but contained in the spinal cord. So in our body, spinal cord, and in all other parts of the body, in every, you know, every nerve connected to it. So they're talking about how this term, river that flows out of Eden, the upper brain, from what I've read and what I've listened to, they always refer, say, the brain in a way, or the mind, as like a garden. A lot of different things in the mind, you know, a lot of thoughts as well, and a lot of them also refers it to the Garden of Eden, and kind of goes back to the story of Adam and Eve, somewhat like that. So here they talk about the upper brain. So far I haven't really heard much of the upper brain, but that's interesting to look at. And it talks about the river that flows out. So river that flows out of Eden, out of the upper brain, to water the garden in a way. I get the metaphor, somewhat. Actually, there's another video that I was listening to Bill Donahue as well, on the title of Speaking in Tongues, Talking in Tongues, and that a lot of commentary I also want to talk about, maybe, you know, for another episode. But yeah, one of it is you know, how the speaking in tongues, in the Bible, it talks about some river flowing out from your belly. That really reminds me of this, like, river flowing out in a way, because I spoke in tongues before, and it was a weird feeling, but there was some incidents where I felt something funny in my belly, that it really felt like river flowing out in a way. So, well, let's leave it to that first and continue the next paragraph. The early Christians knew that the scriptures, whether written in the ancient Hebrew or the Greek, were allegories, parables, or fables based on the human body, fearfully and wonderfully made. So this is the point that I mentioned about how even this author here, Dr. George W. Carey, through his research, and his belief here, talking about how the scriptures, the Bible, were actually, yeah, parables, allegories of the human body, because it's really how the human body works, right? Like what I mentioned, the nervous systems, you know, all the systems from our cardiac, like heart system, our digestive system, reproductive system, all a lot of different systems, and it really talks about it. But in here, in my head, when I was reading it, because they're talking about ancient Hebrew or Greek, right? And he mentioned here, whether written in ancient Hebrew or the Greek, somewhat in a way disregarding the beauty of being written in ancient Hebrew and ancient Greek, because from what I have learned as well, there's a lot of meanings behind languages. So that's how I believe languages really exist and comes out. I mean, thankfully I have a good thing with languages. I know quite some, including, you know, Eastern language, like Japanese, Mandarin, Cantonese, a little bit of Korean. And I love the beauty of languages. And even when learning about the Bible, what intrigued me in the beginning, that made me more devoted to be in Christ in a way, is because of the beauty of Hebrew and Greek and the meaning behind it, in the Bible. So I don't really follow church or the Bible just deliberately, you know, literally using the English translation, but rather it's really Bible translate Bible. And I really love digging in more into the deeper meaning coming from the Greek language and also the Hebrew language, like the root words of like the Hebrew languages. So that's something that I really think is not by coincidence, but they have deeper meanings of it. So here it's like disregarding the languages, it's like a no, there's more than that, I would say. And allegories, parables, it may seem like that, I would say, but at the same time, like what I told you guys as well, there's connection between the stories to the human body, even to the cosmic law, or you know, how the world functions. Everything is connected. That's something I believe in. So it's not just purely on the human body. But yeah, let's continue on to the next paragraph. So here, these adepts knew that the secretion, gray matter, creative, that issues or secretes out from the cerebrum, was the source and cause of the physical expression called man. And they knew that the river of Jordan was symbolized in the spinal cord, and that the Dead Sea was used to symbolize the sacred plexus at the base of the spinal column, where the Jordan spinal cord ends, typifying the entrance of Jordan into the Dead Sea. Okay, in here really talks about secretion, some gray matter issuing out from the cerebrum. So cerebrum from our head, right? From our brain, as the source and cause of physical expression called man. As the source and cause of man. So somewhat our consciousness, I would say. Man knew the river of Jordan symbolized in the spinal cord, and the Dead Sea as the sacred plexus at the base of the spinal, I guess like one of the lower chakras, and then it kind of showing the entrance of Jordan into the Dead Sea. Somewhat, you know, reading this, even though for them they take it as, you know, this Jordan, Dead Sea, more like stories, you know, kind of symbolizing everything in the body, I look at it on the opposite way, or you could say a hybrid way, where it all the more proves to me that we're all connected. So in a way, that's also connected, right? The law of oneness, the law of divine oneness, that everything is connected. Everything, is interconnected. And Jordan into the Dead Sea, you know, how our spinal cord was created is very similar to how the world was created or designed. And that's the goodness of our great architect, our great creator. You know, all the more I worship him because of it. And yeah, we come to this idea of the spinal cord, you know, how the spinal cord in a way controls everything, because it relates a lot, even to chakras, to consciousness. And one that I was really reading into like from weeks ago was on microcosm and macrocosm, and that was from the Chinese Taoism. Yeah, and also I did a kind of like a Tibetan meditation before, just to understand where they were coming from, and also almost similar in a way. So I believe so, because I also had this one experience where I felt something from my back, like from my spine, and it was almost like spiritual or divine, like supernatural in a way. So that's why I do believe quite off, you know, of how the human body was created and the hidden meanings behind it. Okay, we're going to the next paragraph. The thick oily and salty substance composing the sacral planets, sacral plexus, cauda equina, tail of the horse, may be likened unto crude petroleum, petra, mineral or salt, and oleum, Latin for oil, and the thinner substance. Oil or ointment in spinal cord may be compared with coal oil, and when this oil is carried up and crosses the ida and pingala, so two fluid nerves that end in a cross in medulla oblongata, where it contacts the cerebellum. Golgata in the place of skull. This fluid is refined as coal oil is refined to produce gasoline, a higher rate of motion that causes the ascension of the airship. Wow, very, very deep. A lot of information here. Man, I wonder if we can actually finish everything. Talking about this oil, this substance in the composing the sacral plexus. So the sacral plexus, if I'm not wrong, as I remember, there was one image. It's the chakra number 3 from the bottom, number 3. So it's tail of the horse. It's likened onto like petroleum. And there's another oil in the spinal cord compared as the coal. I mean, petroleum and coal, somewhat similar. So it's talking about how it's carried up and crosses two fluid nerves, and where it contacts the cerebellum. So cerebellum in here, it talks about the Golgata, the place of the skull. So Golgata is mentioned in the Bible, right? It's where Jesus was crucified at. So when we talk about crucifixion, being crucified, they talked about how it actually represents the cerebellum, the skull. So it's all the way in our skull. I mean, Golgotha, if I remember correctly, I don't exactly remember, but there was some evidences archaeologically or historically that they did find a place that seemed like a place, like a stone that looked like a skull. But at the same time, if we bring it to our body, I suppose it could be possible that, you know, where Jesus was crucified at is actually in our brain, like at the skull. So that's why they call it Golgotha, and it's the cerebellum, the place of the skull. So this, it's very interesting because they always talk about like the pineal gland and everything else, and everything is in the skull, right? And to get that Christ consciousness, you know, you have to go all the way up. Everything is in the mind as well. So there is that possibility. And it talks about how this fluid in our nerve, like nerve fluid, is refined. So it's similar to like coal or how petroleum is, and it produces gasoline that which causes airship to ascend. So it causes it to go up. So I think that's the idea for it. It's kind of hard to fully understand because so many things here, even to understand about how petroleum or how coal works, but it's actually pretty good knowledge. So here we'll continue on to the next paragraph. When the oil ointment is crucified, so in here, to crucify means to increase in power 1,000-fold, but it doesn't mean to kill, so it's not to kill. It remains 2.5 days, and it's the moon's period in a sign. In the tomb, the cerebellum, and on the 3rd day, ascends to the pineal gland that connects the cerebellum with the optic thalamus, the central eye in the throne of God, that is the chamber, overtopped by the hollow hallowed caused by the curve of the cerebrum, the most high of the body, which is the temple of the living God, the living the vital substance, which is the precipitation of the breath of life, breathed into man. Therefore, the Holy, whole ghost or breath. Okay, there's a lot here. It's talking about how this oil is crucified. And the meaning of crucify, for what they mentioned, is to increase in power 1,000-fold. But it doesn't mean to kill. So that's crucifixion for them. I mean, in a way, yes, because if we're talking about the human body, if you use the word crucify and that the oil is kind of being ascended up, right? Kind of going up to our brain, to our mind. It increases in power. So, I mean, everything about consciousness and everything. So, power is definitely there. So, I believe in that. And to use the word, like, not to kill, because it's in our human body with that consciousness, and everyone is really into consciousness now, right? I don't think there's any evidences of that consciousness causing death, causing people to actually die. So in that sense, for our human body, no. But if we were to put it in real life, like when Jesus was here, then definitely death was real. But rather, he didn't really die, right? He went to hell, and then after 3 days he ascended. So he didn't really die, but in a way, because for one is that before the fall of men with Adam and Eve, they were not designed to die. They were designed to live on like a long, long life. So that's why in the past they talked about how they live like 900, 800 years, you know, so much longer than now. But that was then, right? That God never created death at that point until the fall of man, where God cursed humans and eventually death came in. And symbolically, that's how Jesus had to die. But technically, in a way, he just went to hell to conquer it all, kind of, I don't know, like winning everything? I have to kind of look into that, but since he's so great and so powerful, like that's when they talk about how the first man and the last man, right? The first Adam and the last Adam, and the last Adam was Jesus. In the New Testaments, especially in Hebrews, and that's how, you know, he talked about their death is conquered, like once and for all, you know, died for everyone. So really hard to say, but at least that's in my head. And here they really bring in the numerical values about 2 days and a half. So it's the moon's period in a sign. So 2 days and a half in the tomb, and on the third day ascended to the pineal gland. So the tomb here, they talk about how the tomb is the cerebellum, where we talk about the skull. So that's the tomb as well, and ascends to the pineal gland. So the pineal gland is connected to the cerebellum with the optic thalamus, or a central eye. In the throne of God, that is the chamber overtopped by the hollow caused by the curve of the cerebrum. So I think it's talking about the features in our brain, how it's connected. But yeah, on the third day, ascending to the pineal gland. I mean, the pineal gland is noted to be like everything, the highest, like the higher self. That's where the consciousness is, and that's where we want to aim for, in a way, to get it lightened up, you know, the third eye and everything else, right? The goodness of God and being resurrected, ascending. I would say, I mean, one of the helpful methods that really helped me is really always praying to Jesus, not to Jesus before he died, for what really one good pastor mentioned, like pray to him for the Jesus that has resurrected, because that's the Jesus who has finished it all, you know, once and for all, and you know, the one who has the most power already, and really to kind of look up to him and remember him. So I always picture and visualize Jesus as the ascended one, that he, the third day where he has ascended, and you know, he's glowing, he's really bright, and you know, he's really there, and he's not like the one who's suffering, but the one who has already been enlightened. So yeah, and in here, I mean, it's really nice about how he talks about like the throne of God that looked like a chamber, you know, in the cerebrum, and he mentioned the cerebrum is the most high of the body, most high. We talk about most high of like who God is, not just Jesus, like most high as in God himself. Oh yeah, one actually by Bill Donahue in the previous, I think, episode, he mentioned as well how it's like, yeah, people say hallelujah, hallelujah, but they're actually praying to Allah, like the Islamic God, but actually it's still, everything is the Abrahamic God, right? Where actually Allah is also our God, like Father God. I know, like in the Indonesian Bible, they call God the Father Allah as well. And actually, I know the Hallelujah, Yah, is not coming from Allah, but the Yah is actually like Yehuda or Yahshua or some. But Yah is actually part of God's name. And if you look in the Bible, God has many names, right? From Elohim, you know, Allah, a lot of El Shaddai, and including Yahweh. Actually, his the name that is most I think prioritized, I would say, in terms of the other names, is Yahweh. And the fact that Yahweh can be found in the Hebrew word of woman and man as well, and that's where I have this really good pastor who really taught like the Hebrew of Yahweh and how the Yah is in the languages, and how, you know, God bring him, and how God created woman out of man. Everything is really entailed in that. And even grace itself, like if we think about how Jesus is the truth, the way, the life, one of it is also Jesus is grace, and it's found in the book of Hebrews, and like the goodness of what grace really mean. All the more, I mean, there's a lot of things I forgot as well, but I remember hearing and listening, and in my heart I kind of know. So somewhat there's that, right? And that's something I really always wanted to talk about, like the most high God, Yahweh, yeah. Hallelujah. And in here it also says the cerebrum is the temple of the living God, and I think I know what he meant by temple, where God really resides at. And if we think about how heaven works, same thing, I think it's all interconnected, like the heaven out there in the sky, in the universe, and even in our head, in our mind. I think it's interconnected, and that's what I believe in, because to me that is the law of oneness. Everything is connected, there's no coincidence, it's just something we have to look into it. And I think that's why I'm a bit more accepting, but at the same time, when people is just one-sided, they deny one thing on the other, all the more I question it, you know. Okay, and here it also talks about the living substance is the precipitation of the breath of life breathed into man, right? The Holy Ghost, the breath of life, is considered to be the Holy Spirit that was breathed into man, right? God really breathed into man. That's how man became conscious. That's how man gets his spirit, his soul, and became life. In a way, I do believe it, because if you think, you know, we never really thought about how we really breathe. It comes naturally to us. But breathing is actually very important, because I've been into breath work as well, and I've been doing a lot of Wim Hof breathing. And actually, I have a very flat nose. I'm very envious of people who have like higher nose, but that's, I think, they say, right? How even animal breeds change between people, geography, you know, how the weather affects them as well. That causes the transformation of our body, our physical body, and eventually how we are brought in into this world, like our features, you know, like Asians, others, but yet we have different features as well. And then even myself, like when I think about it, sometimes I don't feel like I breathe normally. Like it's not the right way of breathing in a way. And I think Wim Hof breathing has a lot of good teachings, where one of it is that our like what our body was actually meant to be able to conquer, which is technically able to be to survive in extreme conditions. And for us, we have to train them. There's one where it's like if we're just in room temperature all the time, we're not training our body, and so our body becomes weaker in a way. And through Wim Hof breathing, I think, you know, people are able to withstand the coldness and withstand the heat a lot better, and they became healthier too. Like, you know, things in their body just becomes healthier overall, and I feel like that's definitely interconnected with everything relating to breath work and breathing. What's the meaning of truly breathing, and how, you know, breathing actually soothes us, right? Breathing makes us more relaxed as well. Like kind of the oxygen, you know, CO2, everything, the science, the scientific of it, it's just all interconnected. So that's why I really believe in it. But it's just too complex for our head to kind of grasp into. That's why I'm a little bit more accepting of things. But yeah, that's really, you know, where my mind is right now. Okay, another paragraph is a rather short paragraph because it kind of goes to part two eventually. The pineal gland is the pinnacle of the temple, the modus operandi by which the oil of the spinal cord reaches the pineal gland is described in part two. So the pinnacle of the temple, pinnacle of the temple. I mean, one of it that later I think the book will mention a lot, but many others also mention it, is that it talks about the human body, right? So actually there's another thing, is that the human body is the temple of God. It's also mentioned actually in Jesus as well. I mean, one, there's so many, but one, when he was angry at, you know, the people, robbers, or like selling corruption, everything, you know, in the temple, Jesus was angry, and after that he kind of threw a lot, kind of ransacking, and then the guards or the pharaohs, and not pharaohs, Pharisees came in, scolded him, and he was like, you know, I will rebuild it, like rebuild the temple in 3 days, and everyone laughed at him, right? But what he was really talking about is his death at the tomb, you know, after 3 days, and he would be ascended. He would not ascended, resurrected. He would be resurrected within 3 days. In a way, it kind of brings in as well, you know, to the human body, where actually later on, after all the Christians, you know, the Gospels came out, and everyone talks about how actually we are the temple of God, and we don't necessarily need to be in church, you know. Rather, you know, when we want to share the gospel and everything, we share the gospel. We are the church in a way. So it's our body is the temple, and our body is the church. So it's like not to corrupt it, not just physically, externally, but even our body. We have to take care of our body. That's our responsibility. And if we do corrupt our body, you know, bad things will happen to our body, right? That's why we take care of our body. We take care of this temple. And for one, I would say, you know, things like masturbation, right? We know it's actually bad. It's just really hard. But that comes in, especially a lot of Christians struggle with it too. Which is the truth. Everyone struggles with it because it's temptation, right? There's that sexual energy, and that's also talking about how taking care of the temple, what is our responsibility truly. I would say that would be it. And yeah, the whole body is our temple, and what we do with it is actually our responsibility as well. That's why, in a way, I do believe in karma, but karma is mainly because of the universal law as well, right? The reciprocity, correspondence, and everything else. Okay, let's go to part two. I mean, now we're at 40 minutes. We ended, yeah, part one. Part two, pretty long too. I don't know. Should I continue or should I end here? But, like, I'm really having fun, like, you know, talking about this. So, since my first one was at 1 hour already, let's try for another hour. Not another hour. I mean, like, to make it 1 hour, so around 20 more minutes. We'll just, you know, do it as much as we can. So, I'll go to the next paragraph. So, this is already part two. Okay. There is no name under heaven whereby ye may be saved except Jesus Christ did, and then crucified. Correct rendering of the Greek text. So here it's kind of quoting from the Greek text, and it was talking about how there's no other name under heaven that you may be saved except Jesus Christ did. And here it's not Jesus Christ. Christ is Christed, so with an ed at the end, and then crucified. It kind of makes me think that they're taking this Jesus Christed. This Christed is more like an action rather than you know, the symbol of Jesus himself. But yeah, let's move on. The other one is actually pretty long. Maybe we might even talk, you know, until the end of it. You know, so this one long paragraph. Okay. Here, every 28 and one half days where the moon is in the sign of the zodiac that the sun was in at the birth of the native, there is a seed or psychophysical germ born in the or out of the solar plexus, the manger, and this seed is taken up by the nerves or branches of the pneumogastric nerve and becomes the fruit of the tree of life or the tree of good and evil. This good, if saved and cast upon the waters, circulation, to reach the pineal gland, and evil, if eaten or consumed in sexual expression on physical plane or by alcoholic drinks, or gluttony that causes ferment, acid, and even alcohol in the intestinal tract. Thus, no drunkard can inherit the kingdom of heaven, for acids and alcohol cut or chemically split the oil that unites with the mineral salts in the body and thus produces the monthly seed. Oh, very long, very long. In here it says every 28 and one half days where the moon is in the sign of the zodiac that the sun was in at the birth of the native. So, talking about the birth of the sun, like where the sun comes in, there's so many that was mentioned. Actually, I haven't learned too much about it, but from what I have heard and what I have listened to, talking about how the sun actually is like the start of spring. Some people talk about how the real one is actually on March 20 and 21, but somehow through the year some people changed it to April or something like that, and changed some dates of it. But it's talking about how the moon is in the sign, right? Talking about how the moon actually functions and moves every 8 and 1.5 days. Kind of brings in again of how, I think that was mentioned, I wonder if it was in this book or somewhere else, where the world, there's that leap year, right? Every 4 years, in February, there's 29 days, where Usually it's 28 days, and also the studies of how the different calendars were created. There's the lunar calendar, and there's the solar calendar, and then there's the Julius calendar by Julius Caesar, and there's the Gregorian calendar by the Pope Gregory. That I haven't really looked too much into details of it, but at least the mention of them is definitely very interesting of, how long, like what's the accuracy of the moon actually, right? I don't know too, but at least have you guys ever wondered or pondered, like from my memory, when I was young, okay, now I'm in my 20s, like late 20s. But when I was younger, I always look at the sky, and the moon and the sun always look so small. Like, yeah, I mean, maybe my size was small, but I didn't really grow much. I'm not that tall. And now at this era, when I look at the moon and the sun, they look closer to me. Like they look closer to the earth, like makes me think, are we actually like how are we moving actually, like in the solar system? Are we like getting closer and closer to the sun? That's why there's like global warming, climate change here and there, and everything else. That makes me wonder and ponder a lot too. It's very unique in that sense. Or yeah, that's just my feeling actually. I don't know how you guys feel. I've mentioned to it to some people, like to some of my friends, but never really continued the conversation much. But it's something in my mind that has always been in my mind. That's the intriguing part of it. Yeah, so I don't know the accuracy of the days, but yeah. And then here it talks about the birth of the native, right? Where there is a seed, or also known as like a psychophysical germ born in or out of the solar plexus. And then the solar plexus is also considered the manger in here, where the context they mention. I mean, the manger, if you think about it, is like Jesus was born in the manger. Okay, when talking about birth or born manger, maybe, because in like astrology and everything about worshipping the sun, they relate how the sun is Jesus, right? How Jesus is the sun. And for me, it just connects everything because Jesus to me is God. Jesus is God, and it reflects everything, including the 13th zodiac or something like that. But yeah, the sun was born, and here it talks about how this germ was born in the manger, the solar plexus. And there was also one video, or I think it's the same video of this book, the one I came across from, is that why is this plexus called the solar plexus? And actually, I never knew what the solar plexus was until 2 3 years ago, when I was watching an anime movie called Demon Slayer, and it was the movie for the Mugen Train. So it's the Infinity Train, and it depicts. I love Demon Slayer so much. I mean, it really reflects life so much that it really relates a lot. And wow, the more I think of it, it's like, oh wow. So in the movie, there is this character called Rengoku. Rengoku is, you could say, someone who has the power or the skills or the techniques of representing the flame pillar, the flame Hashira, flame, so fire, right? You think about it. And he's such a great character. I don't want to spoil things. I hope you guys really watch the animes. One of my favorite anime of all times. Really. I always cry in that scene. Damn. But he was actually hurt in the solar plexus. And that was the first time I came across the word solar plexus. It's like, it's kind of below the rib cage, kind of. Like, where our stomach is. In a way, so I've always like thought, oh, what is solar plexus? And it's very intriguing where they call it solar plexus. And the video that I watched also mentioned, yeah, why they use the word solar, and it's actually the solar of our whole body. And in a way it's like the middle part as well, right? And yeah, if you get hurt there, bad things happen to you. Blech. But yeah, in here it's called the manger, so there's this germ that's being born off, which can be considered like the sun, like Jesus as well. And this seed is taken up by the nerves or branches of the pneumogastric nerve. The pneumogastric nerve, from the video that I was watching, it kind of showed me a nerve that was very similar to, like, almost like lymphatic nodes. I forgot what nerve, the vagus nerve, and it was very near, like behind our ear and connected to our fascia nerve, like the fascia on our face. And I've been really into like massaging my face as well, because I think we can fix our face alignment through massages, exercises on our face, like face yoga kind of thing, and alignment of our own like our whole body, because there's always that misalignment, right? And definitely just operating on it, or you know, plastic surgery or such things, it's just not a fully cure, but like just a way out of it. So I don't really believe much in surgeries or operations. I always believe there's like natural ways to heal things. And yeah, in here, taken up by the nerves or branches, nerves, so it's like really just a lot of nerves, and becomes the fruit of the tree of life or the tree of good and evil. In here, it's either one, right? Tree of life or tree of good and evil. From the video that I watched, in our body there's actually two types of systems as well. One is the nervous systems that most likely could be the good and evil one, like the tree of good and evil, and the other is the tree of life, where it's might be the heart system, the tree of life, like the nerve, that cardiac nerve system most likely. But yeah, in here it says it's the fruit, right? When we think about the fruit, I don't know, spiritual fruit maybe too. And here it says it's good if it's saved, good if saved and cast upon the waters, means there's circulation to reach the pineal gland, huh? Mainly the circulation of the nervous systems as well, maybe. And it's evil if eaten or consumed in sexual expression, by physical pain or alcoholic drinks or gluttony. Talking about how bad it is, I suppose, means that our body always needs circulation, right? Circulation is always very good in our body, but of course it also talks about it's bad. Alcohols are bad for us, like being too alcoholic, and gluttony as well. I mean, here it talks about acid, right? That's why, funny enough, but I've got more and more friends complaining or mentioning that they have gastric issues, gastric problems, and that could be a part of it. Yeah, I think that causes a lot of issues in our body. For me, I would say I'm not a very alcoholic person. I'm not good at drinking much, but I do believe in moderation, and I do believe that some alcohols are really good for us to warm up our body, and I do believe in the goodness of red wine, the antioxidants of red wine, and there's one, the, why is it called, the resveratrol or something, it's the one that has anti-aging in red wine, that really really kind of heals people, and just is very good for people. I mean, one, also we take the communion with red wine, and I see the goodness of red wine. So it's like not exactly, you know, being a alcoholic, like a drunkard, right? That is definitely not in moderation. But you know, alcohol itself is there's some goodness, but if we take it too much, then it's no good. So there's also that gluttony, right? If we eat too much as well. So I'm also taking care of my health by not eating a lot. I have issues with weight loss as well, and I know that I always crave a lot of things in the past. So now I'm also practicing intermittent fasting to just help myself. And so far, I think it's been going pretty good. I can do better though. But yeah, in here, no drunkard can inherit the kingdom of heaven, which I think when we think about it and we talk about it too, similar things. If we take care of our body, don't get too drunk as well, we're actually taking care of ourselves, and in a way, it's also something good, for God as we worship Him, and we are sober in our head as well, right? So that's the goodness of it. I think it's hard to actually explain a lot of like that oneness that I mentioned in two words, but I hope you guys understand where I'm coming from, where there's a lot of it that actually relates to how we live, how we see the world, how the world operates as well, how our body operates as well. And yeah, like with all those information, what else can we do with this? And that's something I do want everyone to ponder upon. And of course, taking care of ourselves and really look into it without being just one-sided. So I don't agree of just saying that, oh, the Bible is not true, but rather everything proves what's in the Bible, and the Bible proves everything that's in the world today in a way. So there's that interconnectedness. But so far I think that's it for today. I think I'll go through the others on another time. But yeah, it's been so much fun like learning about this and contemplating on this as well. That's why so far my type of podcast is really on my own, speaking to myself, speaking to you guys who are listening. And really kind of thinking it through. Really based on the response whether I want to keep it short or not, but so far I've been having it fun, even just talking for it for 1 hour, and now this is at like 56 seconds. But yeah, it's been so much fun, and I hope you guys also enjoy the discussions and the words. Would I post this like the link down below? I think I can, but at the same time, I want you guys to listen to me or, do research on your own. I'll think about it. But yeah, thank you everyone, and it's been great fun just talking about this. It's really one of my passion. It's, just thinking about existential things. I do want, to make it my career, my path as well. But it's a little bit hard because usually you need a lot of structure with it. But, with all these things, coming all together and then like oneness, so hard to make things structured, so complex. But yeah, hopefully, one day I'll be able to also mentor people or like share my knowledge even more. Somewhat like that. I think it'll be great. I'm not a type of person who really helps out people a lot, but sometimes I'm scared. Sometimes I'm scared people don't accept it, but as long as I have my own way of thinking, I have my own mindset, and I do believe, these are the things that God is leading me towards, and I always trust Him. So it's kind of good to know, and hopefully more and more people are open to this or get to listen to me more. But yeah, I suppose I'll stop here right now. Thank you so much, and hope to see you guys, not really see you guys, but hope you guys listen to my other episodes or other podcasts as well. Thank you all. Bye.